All right, the recorder is on. Let's see. What page do you have? Oh, you have a Kindle. Who has a paperback? What page do you have in the paperback?
283.
283 in the paperback. It's also 283 on my Kindle. All right, so NTI Romans chapter 16, the last chapter of Romans. Greet one another. In greeting one another, you greet yourself, being of one mind with me. There is no one that you meet that is not of me. So there is no one that you meet who is not you also. As you greet him, you greet yourself. You know, being from the Course in Miracles culture, and I'm sure this is true in other cultures as well, it's just I only know the Course in Miracles culture. But you know, one thing that you often hear people say is like, well, you know, Dave's a part of me, you know, or Lynn's a part of me. And you know, in my head, that always never worked. And I think one reason it never worked is because the word me in that case still meant Regina, right? It wasn't the divine self. And Dave is not inside of Regina, right? Dave is, you know, so it doesn't make any sense. And so I really always had trouble with that concept of oneness when it was approached from that point of view, because it didn't make sense. And in fact, it's not even right, which is why it didn't make sense. But the way Spirit helped me to begin to grasp our oneness is by noticing that inspiration or Spirit in me is exactly the same as inspiration or Spirit in you. So, for example, recently there have been a couple people that I've met, David Hemphill, you know, who's the 17-year-old, right? And Bentino Massaro, who is a 25-year-old. And neither one of these guys are anything like Regina Don Akers, 53-year-old female. You know, nothing like me at all at the level of form. But when I sat with both of them, either one of them, and we were talking at the wisdom level, it was clear to me I was talking to myself. Right? Like, wisdom is my true self. I've now, my identification has shifted enough that I know that. When wisdom speaks, that is my voice. And so I could hear my voice coming from David Hemphill. I could hear my voice coming from Bentino. In fact, I remember even telling Bentino how fun it was to meet David, because David was so young, and that when we were sitting and speaking at wisdom, it was ageless. But then we went caving, and we were just playing. He became the 17-year-old again, and it was fun to watch. You know, but when in the wisdom conversations that we had, there was no age. It wasn't a 53-year-old woman talking to a 17-year-old boy. That did not exist there, because the wisdom is totally equal, the wisdom is totally the same, and in the wisdom there's no difference. So that's what this paragraph is saying. It's saying, in greeting one another, you greet yourself, being of one mind with me. There is no one that you meet that is not of me. So that same wisdom is in everyone. Now, they may not be aware of it yet. They may not be cultivating it yet, right? But that exact same wisdom is in anyone. And you can watch people sometimes who never express wisdom. It's not something they're interested in. And sometimes you can see them, then something pushes them onto the spiritual path. And then some of these people just like explode into little wisdom gurus, like really fast. And you can see how they go from no expression of wisdom to perfect expression of wisdom in no time at all. Where did all that wisdom come from? They didn't study for 25 years. They didn't learn it. It was always there, right? It was always there. It just hadn't, for whatever reason, they hadn't started expressing it yet. It hadn't woke up yet. So the wisdom is exactly the same in all of us, whether it seems to be, you know, expressed right now, or whether it still seems to be not being expressed. It's the same. And so if you remember that the wisdom is the same in everyone, whether it's being expressed or not, and you start identifying with the wisdom in yourself, what happens then is everyone you meet, you start to get the sense that they are you. And that's not coming from the personal me. I'm then not saying Dave is Regina, right? I'm recognizing, you know, this is really the core of the namaste, right? The divine in me and the divine in you are the same, and we're beginning to identify with the divine. So this is saying, remember, all of your brothers are that same divine self. And when you greet anyone, anyone, even the guy that hits you at the stoplight, you're greeting the divine, the same divine that you are. And remember that with everyone. The next sentence, sentence 5. Give patience to your brother, and you give patience to the one that you are. Now, the patience here, the way that I, the scribe, heard this was referring to patience for the one who is not yet expressing wisdom. For instance, we talked a little bit before we turned the recorder on, the gossipy one. You know, I had, in fact, when NTI was being written, when this was being written, I had a gossipy one in my life. And that one would come over and sit down and just gossip about everybody we knew. And it was at that point for me, of course, I was judging the gossiping. So it was difficult. I didn't want to be around it. It was difficult to be around it. But this is saying, give patience to your brother. Well, how do you be patient with the gossipy one? You know, how the way I was patient with the gossipy one is I learned to allow her to gossip. And I just sat. And what I did was I learned to let go of my judgment of her gossip, right? So when you give patience to your brother, you give patience to the one that you are. That divine self is somewhere inside of your brother or your sister, but you don't help to bring it out by judging them, ever. You know, like if I sat there and told the gossipy one, you know, well, you just gossip too much, that's not good, you know, I would never do that, blah, 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 blah. You know, that doesn't encourage the birth of the divine. But if you are just patient and loving and the space for whatever is, somehow that does help to encourage the birth of the divine. So when you give patience to your brothers, wherever they seem to be on this path, you are actually helping to birth the divine expression in them. Sentence 6, give trust to your brother, and you give trust to the one that you are. Trusting Holy Spirit was actually easy for me. And anybody who knows me knows that's true. But trust in my brother was a lot harder. Because it didn't make sense to trust people who, you know, would steal from me if I gave them the chance, you know, or talk bad about me if I gave them the chance, or anything else. It didn't make sense to trust them. But I finally learned to trust my brother. This is very, very hard to put into words. It's kind of like the all is well sense. I learned to trust that my brother, first of all, this is more than trust, I think. I learned to trust that my brother is truly the same divine self that I am, and that the ego expression is meaningless. But also I learned to trust that my brother will do exactly what he believes he needs to do. Like I remember when Danielle went and bought a car, you know, Ron helped her to get this great deal, right? And she went in, but then after she, you know, negotiated the great deal, then they wanted to add this warranty on and add that warranty on and add this insurance on. Pretty soon the price of the car was back up, you know, how they do. And she came home, and by the time she got home, she realized, you know, maybe she said yes too many times. And she said something to me. She said, like, you know, I thought I could trust him. He was such a nice guy, though. I thought I could trust him. And I said, Danielle, you can trust him. You can trust him to try and sell all these products because that's his job. You know? He did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to try and sell you all those warranties, and he was supposed to try and sell you that insurance. I said, you know, but you need to know your role, you know, and your role was to know that you didn't need that and to say no, you know. So we can trust our brother. If our brother believes that he needs drugs in order to be happy, and he believes he needs to steal in order to get the money for the drugs, we can trust that our brother will steal. Okay? So now, there's a way of hearing that has no judgment in it. In fact, let me tell you a Ramana Maharshi story. Ramana Maharshi, back before he was, you know, somewhat famous, he lived in the ashram, and they were very, very poor. It was him and a few other people, but some robbers, just assuming there would be money in an ashram, came and they wanted to rob the place, but there was literally nothing to steal. And they got frustrated that there was nothing to steal. And so they started beating up on Ramana Maharshi. And he did not defend himself. And at some point, they left. And after they left, the other devotees who were there said something to him, like, you know, why didn't you fight back? You know, shouldn't we call the police? You know, I don't remember exactly what they said, but they were speaking back. And Ramana Maharshi was just like, no. He says, they did what they were supposed to do. They were supposed to rob. Our job was to be at peace while they rob. You know? So there comes a point where you're not judging any of the roles in the world. And you can trust that people are going to do what they're doing based on their belief and based on their consciousness. And you can trust that, right? But you also, there's not any judgment put on it, or there's not any real meaning put on it, and you're just now doing your part, like Ramana was. And their job was to rob. My job was to be peaceful while they rob, right? So you can trust your brother. Trust your brother doesn't mean, and this is where we got confused before, we thought that trust our brother meant trust them to act the way we want them to act. You can't trust them to do that. You can't trust your brother to act the way you want him to act. You can trust your brother to act in the way he believes he needs to act. Okay? And there comes a point where there's no judgment in that, yes.
Well, I was just thinking, then, I don't know how to articulate this, bear with me. Then how is it that we help one another if we don't, let's say, interfere or allow for them to do what they need to do, when we are also challenged to help each other and someone?
Yeah, well, first of all, at the level of form, you cannot help someone that doesn't want to be helped. That's one of the first rules that's helpful to accept. If someone does not want your help, you can't help them. At the metaphysical level, the most helpful thing that you can always do is accepting the atonement for yourself. That does something at a level that's beyond the human level. That may even help someone to get to the point where at the physical level they want help. You never know. But you accept the atonement for yourself. And whenever you're judging anything, you're not accepting the atonement for yourself. So accepting the atonement for yourself is the primary way of being helpful. Now, one thing that's interesting, though, is just, you know, I said that you can trust your brother to do what he believes he needs to do, right? But I also, like in the example with the car with Danielle, I told Danielle, but her job was to know that she was to say no. So sometimes your job may be to know that you need to lock your car or lock your home, right? You do your part. You know, I used to have a friend live with me named Debbie. Debbie was a thief. I've mentioned Debbie to y'all before. I talked to her yesterday. It was a lot of fun. You know, I used to think, and this is the spiritual ego, I used to think that I was guilty if, when I'm at a spiritual retreat, if I take my purse to the bathroom with me because it meant I wasn't trusting people. Now, that's all just mental crap, by the way. But that's the way our spiritual egos get us all in a knot. I'm guilty. You always know that you're wrong right there if the thought starts with, I'm guilty if, right? That's ego. I'm guilty if I take my purse to the bathroom at a retreat because it'll look like I don't trust my brothers. Well, Debbie, who was an addicted thief, told me that what she hated most about spiritual retreats is she's trying to learn not to steal, and everybody leaves their purses hanging on the back of their chairs while they leave the room. And she's like, I wish they'd just take their purses with them. I was like, wow, I never looked at it that way. You know, so I'm actually, you know, not helping her with my false trust ideas. It's much better for me just to take my purse and go to the bathroom, which I would have done if I wasn't feeling guilty for it, right? That actually would have been natural to take my purse and go to the bathroom, you know? So we get all screwed up, you know, but we think that trust means I'm trusting my brother not to steal. Well, actually, I'm trusting my brother to do what he believes he needs to do. And maybe right now, in his position, he thinks he needs to steal. And maybe I'm being helpful by doing those common sense things like locking my car, you know, locking my house, taking my purse with me when I go to the bathroom. Maybe that's actually, maybe it's not distrust. Maybe that's helpful. Right? So there's all kinds of things to look at there. The ego is very tricky.
Well, going back to my question, when you said, you talked about Danielle, that when she came home and said all these things had been added on, and then when you said to her what he was supposed to sell, because that was his job, your job is to say no.
Yeah, if you don't want it, right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're helping me. This is what I'm confused as to, would I be saying, should I be saying this to Danielle if I were you? You know, should I be saying, pointing that out? Well, your job was to say no if you didn't want it or didn't want to add more to your bill. That's what I meant about us trying to help the other person. Why do we not say anything?
I would say that's an intuitive feeling. Like, there's not an answer I can give. Like, intuitively, I know that it's okay for me to say anything to Danielle. We have that relationship. And I would say more things to Danielle in kind of a corrective way. You could have done this, you could have done this, than I would probably to anybody else on the planet Earth. Because that's our relationship. Right, Danielle? Do you agree with that? Yeah.
See, that's where I get stuck, because I see the chance to help, say, my sister or my brother by pointing something out like you did, but then I'm also caught with, well, just allow them to experience what they experience, because that's what they're going to experience. When do I not, and when do I do it? What you're saying,
it's intuition, and also sometimes it's a matter of permission. Have they given you permission to point things out? You know, like Danielle has given me permission to point things out. And so it's a matter of, and it is a matter of intuition too, because I've had a couple other people in the past who have given me permission to point things out, and I actually didn't really feel that I had the permission, but I would mentally say, but they told me I could, and then I did it, and it backlashed. So see, even though their words said I give you permission, my intuition was still right. My intuition was saying, that's not real permission there. You know, so I should have listened to the fact that that wasn't real permission and just let them go ahead. So intuition is the best answer, and then also, you know, knowing that you have permission, but intuition will help you know whether you have permission. You may have permission with someone who hasn't told you that you have permission, but intuition will know that it's okay. So paying attention to that. Not everybody wants advice. Most people probably do not. More people don't than do. It takes an extremely open person to want to hear that they could have done things differently or made a different choice.
Also, if you have any doubt, if you think, I'm going to tell them this, but maybe I shouldn't, then maybe you shouldn't. I mean, that's kind of how I feel. If I have to force myself to do it, or I have to logic myself into doing, well, it'll be better for them if they know this, and you know, I'll be sorry if I don't tell them that later, and you know, if I have to convince myself that I should say something, then I'm arguing with ego. I'm arguing with against my own intuition. If I have a doubt that I should say something, then I should listen to that and not say something, not try to convince myself of something else. That's my intuition about that.
Does that answer your question then? And Dave, were you about to say something at the same time? I thought I saw your mouth and her mouth open at the same time.
Yeah, I was in Walmart the other day, and I had this feeling that I could just trust the divinity. Trust that, you know, the divinity was actually there in everyone.
Yes.
And it seems like if you trust at that level, then what they do isn't really important, but you know, whatever they do, that they are still divine, and that's not
yes.
going to change. And I felt like I could, you know, I'm not quite to the place where I can really give my trust over to that perspective, but there was something significant in that perspective for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's exactly, I mean, I've said it in the same way, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's why it's, you know, you can, you know, trust that your brother might steal, for example, if that's what, you know, he believes he needs to do right now. But that's why it's meaningless and unimportant, is because at the same time you're looking through that. But people get confused at, you know, people don't know how to act sometimes at the practical human level, because they think that they're supposed to not notice that their brother wants to steal, or not notice that their brother is an alcoholic, or not notice that they're, you know, their relative is a child sex offender, right? They're like, I'm not supposed to see that. I'm not supposed to notice. And the way that you know that that's wrong is because you're in pain. If you pay any attention when you're trying to not notice something like that, you're in pain. You're in resistance, right? So what we're talking about is being able to look right at the form and through it. Okay? So I know my brother is actually divine. I know my brother does not realize that right now. He thinks he needs alcohol, right? He's going to try to, you know, get me to buy him alcohol. I know that that's not my place to buy him alcohol. Therefore, I know I'm going to say no. And when you do all of that from a place of knowing, there's no conflict in you. If somewhere along that storyline you're lying to yourself, you're going to feel a conflict in you. If you're trying to lie to yourself about the appearance of alcoholism, if you're lying to yourself by saying he's bad, so you're judging him rather than recognizing he's really divine, if you're lying to yourself by saying I'm guilty for not giving him what he wants, right? I mean, there's so many opportunities to lie to yourself in that story. And if you lie to yourself at any one of those points, you're going to feel an inner conflict. The only way you're going to feel absolutely free and open and at peace and fine is if you're honest about everything. You're honest about the appearance and you're honest about the truth. Okay? No lies. And you're honest about your role. My role is to say no, even if he gets very angry, right? So complete honesty about the appearance, about the truth, and about your role, and there will be no conflict in you.
It seems like I was able to feel the most peace when I was centered in my own sense of divinity.
Yeah.
Because then I can recognize it. Then I can truly recognize it in somebody else. But I can't go... I couldn't look at somebody and say, okay, or, like Lynn was saying, and start trying to manipulate or create, you know, they're divine.
Right.
I don't see it, but now it's in there. You know,
right.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, mental stuff doesn't work.
It has to be
heart.
First. Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree with that. All right, let's see what our next sentence is. So that was the give trust to your brother. And again, give trust to your brother doesn't mean lie to yourself about the appearance. That was the main point there. So 7, give hope to your brother through your practice of my every word, and you give message to yourself that my word is true. Now, this is not talking about anything external. It's not talking about telling my brother, okay, you're an alcoholic and you're suffering and you need help, and the way I'm going to help you is by accepting the atonement for myself. It's not talking about that. This is a purely inner thing. Right? It's saying that the way you help everyone with all of their beliefs and all of their appearances and all of their suffering is by doing your best to practice every single thing I teach. That's what Spirit is saying. Just do your best, right? And that's the best way to help everyone with everything. Sentence 8, give love to your brother by greeting him as one in you. And you give truth to the mind that is yourself. So what this is saying, again, this is talking to those of us who are still awakening. You could say still learning, still realizing. And it's saying every time you, even if it's intellectual, every time you remember, my brother is divine, you're actually teaching yourself. Right? You're reinforcing that idea in yourself every time. So remember, as much as it comes to your mind to remember, my brother as divine. This one, this bank teller who's really frustrated right now is divine. This bank teller who's really slow right now is divine. This bank teller that didn't give me enough money and thinks he did is divine, right? And you just remind yourself of that, not because you're trying to foresee him that way, because you're reminding yourself of the truth of you, right? You're waking yourself up in that process of remembering. Be humble with your brother, and you recognize his true spirit, which is yours also. We can't ever realize someone else's divinity by thinking we're better than them. That's impossible. It's just impossible. It won't work. So always be humble in your relationship with your brothers, whoever they are, whatever role they're playing. Be humble. And probably the time when that's most important is in a time when, you know, self-righteousness arises. You know, when you really think, you know, your brother is, you know, there you are, the alcoholic, you know, drinking again, haven't you learned yet? You know, there's a self-righteousness that's rising up in you, right? And in that moment, you're being completely forgetful of the truth, and you're moving, you could say, away from realization instead of towards realization. Be humble with everyone, and the more humble that you are, the more you're going to remember both your divinity and your brother's. Give honor to your brother, and you give remembrance that your only truth is me. This has become one of my favorite things to do. I love to honor people, and it's something that happens more inside of me than outside of me. But there, I not only honor everyone, but I feel honored by being with everyone. Like, it's an honor. And there's something in honoring your brother, and this is different than putting your brother on a pedestal above you and you below him, right? Because that wouldn't work. But there's something about honoring your brother, really honoring them, that reminds you of the divinity that you both are. And I think it's great fun. For me, it's fun to honor people. I love to do it. I love to, you know, when people come into my house, to give them something to eat, you know, pull something out of the refrigerator, even if I wasn't planning on them arriving, right? Carry their bag for them, even though I'm the girl and they're the guy, you know, if they'll let me. If not, then I honor them by letting them do it, you know. But I mean, I love to honor my brother. Sentence 11, give to your brother as you would give to yourself in holy remembrance of me. And you give of your willingness to release the world and awaken from the dream of fear. There are a couple, you know, there's it's kind of the secret way of doing this and a truthful way of doing this, and I find them both to be helpful. You know, as you guys know, my recent story was that money appeared to be, you know, maybe running out again in 6 months, but, you know, you could see it running out. Recently there was someone else who is in a very similar situation to me. He works really, really hard, just like I work really, really hard, but it's purely on donations. And I happened to run across his website just in some work I was doing. I noticed he had this little thing there that said something about, you know, if everybody who, you know, was involved in my work, donated $10, I'd have all the money that I need. You know, he said, of course, everybody doesn't donate $10, so if you want to give more, that's great too. You know, he said, everybody doesn't do everything. Well, it immediately hit me, I can honor him by giving him what I would like. You know, I would really like it. It would be dishonest to say differently for people to start, the people who listen to my teachings, the people who feel helped. It would be wonderful if they donated a small amount. If everyone donated a small amount, I'd have everything I need. The problem is actually that few donate. But I would love it if everybody donated a small amount. That would be so easy and so helpful. So if I would love that, why don't I donate to him? So I set up a monthly subscription donating to him. So you give what you want to receive. And that's not only true at the physical level, you know, it's also true at the spiritual level. You want respect, right? You give respect. You want to be trusted, you give trust. You want to be loved, you give love. You want to be forgiven, you give forgiveness, right? Give away everything that you want. This is really the heart of the very common teaching. Most of us know it from Jesus, but I've been told it shows up in every single religion. Give unto others as you would have them give unto you. Or what is it? Is it give unto others?
Do
unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's the same thing, yeah. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And, you know, it's really funny, things like finances. The average person, when they become financially afraid, they start cutting where they give. Right? Is that doing unto others as you would have others do unto you? No. So it's a very basic spiritual law. It works both at the level of form and at the level of spirituality. And by realizing your brother is divine, you're going to realize your own divinity, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Give unto others as you would have them give unto you, at every level. Sentence 12. Give in peace through thought to the world that is you. This is the way to remember your truth, which is peace and freedom and love. Now, what's interesting here is through thought was emphasized. That's why it's in italics. So when this says give in peace through thought, it's really talking about learning to be less judgmental, right? You know, observe things, be at peace in your mind with your brother-in-law who's an alcoholic in whatever way that's helpful. You know, NTI Romans taught the it is what it is, but it's not the only way to learn to be peaceful in your mind, right? But an honest peacefulness in your mind is, again, the most helpful thing that you can give to everyone. Give thought to your thoughts and be aware, for that which is thought is you. Now, this isn't talking in reality. This is talking in experience. You are going to be, at the level of experience, what you think, right? So give thought to your thoughts and be aware, for that which is thought is you. Believe the thoughts that speak not of your truth, and you accept a message that's untrue. So at the level of experience, the more I focus on messages of truth, the more I'm going to realize my truth. The more I focus on ideas that are not true, the more I'm going to believe the false self. So you'll either have an experience of your false self or an experience moving towards your true self based on where you allow your mind to focus its attention. So if you believe that you are unworthy and you have thoughts all the time about how unworthy you are, that will be your experience. If you believe that you are doing your best and that you are awakening, right, that's going to be your experience. You're going to move in the direction of that attention. To be free of delusion, release delusional thoughts. Listen to them no more. Be aware that you perceive and believe as you think. Question what you think against that which you truly desire. I could talk an hour on that paragraph. You might want to just take that paragraph out and spend time contemplating that paragraph. In fact, maybe that will be our assignment this week. Spend time contemplating that paragraph. To be free of delusion, release delusional thoughts. Listen to them no more. Be aware that you perceive and believe as you think. Question what you think against that which you truly desire. So if I think, I have so much trouble sometimes thinking up examples since they don't live in my mind anymore. If I think, I'm still gaining weight as I age. I consistently gain 10 pounds every decade of my life. So if I think that gaining weight equals unworthiness, and, now I'm, 140, where when I was 17 I was 102, and somehow I still think 102 is where I'm supposed to be, right? And how many times a day do I have the opportunity to think about that? Every time I look in the mirror, every time I put on clothes, every time, I have so many opportunities. I need to, if I keep thinking that adding weight equals unworthiness, I'm going to feel really, really unworthy. There's just no doubt about that. I'm feeding myself constantly those ideas. If I want to be free of the delusion that I'm unworthy, I need to be willing to not continue to believe those thoughts. I really do. And sometimes it's difficult in the beginning because it's almost, we're in such a habit. It's just like being the alcoholic. We're in such a habit of believing those thoughts, and we believe them. So, you can't just say, okay, it's not true, I'm worthy. Because that, at that level, at that point, is a lie. Because you believe that you're unworthy.
It's a fact.
It's a fact for you.
Yeah.
So that's why this talks about questioning. Question this against what you want. You need to be aware that what you want is to know your truth, or however you word that. And then you need to look at that thought, I'm unworthy because I've gained weight. And you need to say, is this thought helping me to realize my truth? What do I want more, this thought or my truth? And what happens through that question is you're awakening your wisdom. And then your wisdom can say no to the thought. The ego that believes it can't. Right? So you use questioning to awaken your wisdom, and then with your wisdom, this thought's not helpful, I don't want this thought, then you can let it go. So where I think a lot of people make the mistake is trying to let go of a thought while they're still at the level of ego. What's the line in the Course about you can't, or is it Einstein? It's either the Course or Einstein or both. You can't let go of a problem at the level that created it. Einstein.
The mind that created the problem is the problem.
Something, I think, yeah, that's the idea. So the mind that believes I'm unworthy because I've gained weight isn't the mind that can let it go. You use the inquiry, the questioning, to awaken the wisdom that is also a part of you. And then when the wisdom has been, you know, embraced, brought up, whatever you want to call that, invoked, then the letting go happens. So you're just going to torture yourself if you try to let go with the mind that believes it. Verse 20, to let go of division-based thoughts is to let go of all that isn't true. This frees the mind of what it believes and opens it to remember its truth. Now I ask you to remember your Father, whose will has sent this voice to you. It is the will of oneness and peace and of truth that is forever true. To remember your Father is to remember your truth. You are loved and you are forever free. In your oneness, you are blessed as the Holy Son of God. In your oneness, you are forever your truth. So what this is again saying, it's a common error for us to think that when A Course in Miracles is talking, when NTI is talking, when Bentino Massaro is talking, when, you know, anybody is talking, that the one that they're talking about is the person. You know, if they're talking about our true self, and they're saying the entire world is in you, and, you know, all of this stuff, they're not talking to the person. They're talking through the person to that which is not the person, right? And this is saying it's in your oneness that you're truth. It's in your oneness that you're forever. It's not in that individual person. That's not who you are. Love yourself. And again, this is not talking about the person, although you can't judge the person and love yourself. But love yourself as love is what you are. Forever be kind and gentle. I love that line. Forever be kind and gentle, both to yourself, to everyone, to everything. Give nothing that is not deserving in the mind of peace. Give nothing that is not deserving the mind of peace. Again, it's just asking us not to judge, right? Because every time you judge, you're giving something that is not deserving in the mind of peace, right? And you honor your truth through thought. If you remember not to judge, you are honoring your truth. And then amen. So that's the end of Romans, which means next week we get to start 1 Corinthians.
It's beautiful.
It's a nice ending, isn't it? All these little tips and reminders. Yeah, but I think that what we'll do, unless you guys disagree, is we'll, for our assignment, maybe at least every morning, if you guys don't mind, it's really asking more than I usually ask, but read that one paragraph that's under verses 17 to 19 that starts with sentence 3. Read sentences 3 through 6 every day and spend a few minutes contemplating them at least. Is that okay? And then we'll see if, you know, what realizations or what clarity or, you know, what arises. But that will be our assignment for the week. And I'll turn off the recorder now.